Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario RPG, or Super Mario 64?
Super Mario Brothers. Hands down.
This is how we lead in.
Yes, this is how we do.
I'm thinking that you're assaulting me for the whole comment about the raccoon suit.
I think that's it. My co-hosts are surprisingly quiet.
Excuse me, I asserted my opinion.
You did. You went Super Mario. Kyle?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm busy picking spells. I'm going to have to go with Super Mario 64.
Really?
Contention.
It's funny because it's not really the type of game I usually get into, and I remember distinctly it being a game that I beat my head against the wall over for a while, but I really rather enjoyed it. I have a sense of nostalgia around it. And I really never played the Super Mario RPG aside from that, like, 10 minutes when I was hanging out with you guys that one time, and we played it on your Raspberry Pi.
It's true. Jeff?
Well, I would... If the Super Mario Brothers, does that include... 1, 2, 3.
Like, I was specifically thinking the original SNES, but, and I didn't specify, that's why I used that specific title. I'm going to stick to the original and hold it there so we don't introduce variants into the this, or that, because Lord only knows our listeners will never let me live it down if I introduce a fourth option.
That's because that is not its own separate. And faithful servants.
Yeah. They are the good and faithful servants.
You will hold fast to tradition or you will get flogged.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
That's the rule. That's how we handle things in Bartertown. okay. I'll go with Super Mario.
Okay.
Brothers. Simply because I love side scrollers, and yes, sometimes you just need to have a two-dimensional day.
Yes.
I'm just going to say that.
That's fair.
That needs to go on a t-shirt.
Trademarked it.
Yeah. Well,
can we also, but can the person who is actually saying that be Flat Stanley and just say sometimes you need a two-dimensional day?
Bingo bango. I like it.
I am going to throw my vote in here, and this actually might surprise some people. But Super Mario RPG is one of my favorites of all time because it was the second RPG that I ever played.
Who are you? That's gross.
What was the what's your frame of reference? What was the first RPG you played?
Secret of Mana.
I'm trying not to have a seizure right now.
We might have to find a new guest GM, guys.
I don't know if I can make it.
I'm fed up with this world.
I'm getting out of here. Frame of reference received.
Yeah, it's keep in mind that we didn't have a Nintendo system in my house until 1998, and this we're talking regular Nintendo system until 1998. When my brother and I bought it off of some friends of ours. And then the next 6 months later, bought an SNES. And then we both pooled our Christmas and birthday money the next year to buy the N64. And then the PlayStation happened. And then I bought the PS2. So it was the beginning of the cycle. So we we put a ton of time into, the Secret of Mana would have been on the Super Nintendo. But we played that one front to back and had so much fun with it. It's still one of my favorite games to this day.
Nice.
And so Super Mario, that it has a special place in my heart because of all of those hours of my brother and I laying on the floor in our living room when we were kids, just playing Super Mario or playing Mario RPG.
Those are good memories.
Yeah. It's
totally
a lot of fun.
It. Totally buy it. I'm in.
My wife, though, is not amused.
No,
she does not.
I'm not.
She does not agree.
As we've established, I hold tradition and correct opinions. So,
Shots fired! Shots fired! Hi, everyone. This is the MinMax podcast, and this is episode 49. And today is a special day. Kyle, do you realize what today is, or what this episode is?
I do realize what this episode is, Alan.
Ashley, you know what episode this is, right?
I'm quite familiar.
Hey, Jeff, do you know what episode this is?
I don't know. I got this weird text message, and they told me to show up here.
This will actually be the calendar year, first year of the podcast. So we
are three
episodes shy of the full year with the full 52 episodes. Because we had the couple of weeks where we had to take off, and then we took off one for Christmas. But this is calendar year. This will release one day after we started the podcast. The first episode went up May 22nd last year. And so we've officially been doing this podcast for a full year at this point. And frankly, what better way to celebrate and commemorate the opportunity and the wonderful fun that we've had on this podcast by doing D&D Demo 5. And so we have Jeff Romo with us today, and he is going to be our guest DM. Ashley, you have some questions to ask.
Yeah, I do.
Uh-oh.
So Jeff, you know, have you stretched beforehand?
I have stretched myself. My body is ready.
Okay. Just making sure that you're ready for this very hardcore interrogation you're about to receive.
Let's do it.
You ready? Okay. When did you first realize you were a nerd?
If my mom is to be believed, if she is to be believed, I rolled over for a toy commercial. I think it was a G.I. Joe commercial for action figures when I was just a few months old.
That's fantastic.
That was, yeah, from there on, you know, G.I. Joe had me in his kung fu grip. never let go. So you know, you have to know these things at an early age, and as Duke would tell you, knowing is half the battle. So that's how early it was.
That's fantastic.
That's incredible. So then at what age did you start getting into tabletop RPGs? When did you start DMing?
I want to say it was probably 88 or 89, so that's when I was about 14. So that's when I first got into Dungeons & Dragons. It was when I first moved out to California and some friends. I didn't make friends very easily back then. I'm going to join the club of Introverts Anonymous here. Well, not so anonymous now. They brought me over. They said, hey, you know, we play this game. You know, we noticed you brought all your G.I. Joes over, but we do a different thing. And so we ended up playing second edition D&D.
Okay.
And that's where I knew I get to pretend I'm an elf fighter or elven ranger. I can do that.
Was that your and first character?
Just, yeah. Well, no. My first character lasted I want to say about an hour and a half. It was a rogue, and we played Tomb of Horrors, and I died at the front door. Pretty quick.
Poor guy.
No, so it was okay. It was a good learning lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not providing a lot of confidence right now.
I'm taking out all my youthful pain on you people.
Maniacal laugh.
Yourself.
Maniacal
I guess
laugh.
I might be ready to lose my first character now. He just lasted a little longer than that.
If I recall correctly, you guys are entering a dungeon right now. So
yep, we are. Things are already dicey.
Everybody avoid doors.
I get that. Dicey.
Nice, Alan.
Oh,
well
wow.
Played, sir. Well played.
That one was good enough that it took Ashley a couple seconds to realize what I'd done.
I've
decidedly tuned you out. You may bring inspiration with you into the game as we start.
Yes! Inspiration!
No.
Don't you reward him!
Don't encourage him!
Inspiration! Inspiration!
Too late. Nice. It went straight to his head. It's too late.
Yeah.
Now, you've had quite a reputation for being, as you've described yourself, as a set DM, where you've kind of been invited to come in and do run campaigns or run sessions for people. You want to talk a little bit about your experiences kind of coming in and having this illustrious career?
Yeah, so it's not really illustrious.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, some of the names you were dropping is pretty... That's pretty intense.
Just, Jeff is so cool. Is he sure he wants to play with us?
That'll be enough right there. But no, I think I really want to thank, you know, being a part of En-ROADS Ministries, the concept of being able to game with people across the world has really latched onto me, because as my friends drifted away and you know, went to college, had families, decided to just leave me behind, how dare they? having games was or being able to get into regular games was really difficult. So being able to connect this way over a digital medium, over the wonders of the internet, it really opened it up for me. I decided that, well, you know, I can roll multiple games with En-ROADS, but then I can also work with other groups that, you know, have either I connect with somebody and then they know somebody and then they know somebody. And so it just kind of went from there. So the whole concept of being, you know, kind of like a session guitarist, you know, how they'll play on different tracks. You know, you have Slash and Eddie Van Halen did session work for Michael Jackson, for crying out loud. And while I'm in no way near that class, except for possibly the idea that I share a birthday with the illustrious Eddie Van Halen, I thought, you know what, being a session DM would be kind of fun because I get to meet wonderful people such as you wonderful folks.
Aw, thank you. Now, do you have, as a DM, because we've had several DMs on the podcast now and they've had their own styles and tips and tricks, is there any sort of one thing that you make sure to do or is a style of yours that you've kind of kept throughout all of your sessions that you would either suggest to other DMs or have, you know, suggest that they take a look at, or something that you think kind of defines your style?
Yeah, sure. I'd have to go with the idea of shared narrative being first and foremost. Sometimes one shots don't quite grant you a window into that kind of fun. But over time, as I've watched other game masters do their work and ply their trades, I've started kind of borrowing from individuals here and there. Anything from, you can obviously go to Matt Mercer just because of the way he immerses into non-player characters, NPCs. I think making the NPCs engaging is something that's going to help the world come alive for your players.
Mm-hmm.
If all of them, it doesn't even need to be a different accent. Right. If they just speak with a different cadence, and if they have different drives, it brings them alive. And the players may not even know that. They may pass by the blacksmith that has two kidnapped children, but you don't know about it because you just passed by the blacksmith shop. But just in case, if you do stop in and see him crying, well, then, you know, you got a whole story there.
I'm going to visit every single blacksmith he mentions.
Watch out for the blacksmiths. It's a sob story every time. Bring your weapons and some Kleenex. So what I do is I've borrowed from different game masters. Adam Coble is one. I mentioned Matt Mercer. There's quite a few out there that I've borrowed some tricks from. And one thing that's really stuck with me is the use of to me, the holy grail of games is Burning Wheel. Just because of the level of detail you can apply to your own character, but more also to the individual NPC. So I'll loop back. My tip for game masters is be prepared to have a good narrative time. And for your non-player characters, your NPCs, take some time and maybe scratch up maybe two or three motivations for them. Maybe they have a goal for the day, or they have a potentially a short-term, a mid-term, and a long-term goal. So that way they kind of, it brings forth their drive. So as you're interacting with the players, you know, players may be asking about, you know, you go to the blacksmith and they're asking about swords, but the blacksmith sees that these are able-bodied adventurers and says, look, you know, my kid was kidnapped and the local magistrate's doing nothing about it, but you people don't even like the magistrate. You know, so I mean, it's things like that. You know, that kind of brings that emotion out. And, you know, don't worry about accents. Don't worry about the frilly stuff. Get the motivations down and you'll have a lot of fun. And then the only other thing is that if you do have a long-term campaign, be willing to crush your story and let the players tell their story. You know, crush your darlings at every turn and let the narrative just flow out of your players. Because that, oh my gosh, it's so rewarding. So rewarding.
Yeah, I can think of you referenced Matt Mercer. I can remember, for those who haven't watched the show, they're in the second campaign. But in the first campaign, yeah, right at the end of the Briarwood arc, when the Chroma Conclave arc begins and the dragons destroy Tal'Dorei, there's a moment where everyone is looking around like, what the heck just happened? And Mercer is crying because he's like, guys, I just blew up my world. I just smashed the thing we've been building for 3 years.
It's gone.
And it's gone. And now we have to rebuild. And we have, and we're going in a completely new direction, and there's no turning back. And I remember the emotion on his face and how just purely emotional he was, that a lot of people died that session, and the players were not, they were not ready for that. And I remember just looking at it and going, dang, I want to break my world someday. Like, I want to build something strong enough that everyone falls so much in love with it that when you break it, when you cause the fracture to happen, that you just, you mourn the loss of that thing.
Yeah. That's a, it's a wondrous thing. And to be able to be invested in the story, then have your players invested in the story, and nothing brings about that investment like having them, you know, create the world with you. So, yeah. So what, when we start, be prepared to tell a tale, because I'll invite you all to do so.
I believe with that, Mr. Romo, the floor, the microphones, our characters, our hearts are yours.
Nigh your hearts are mine. Let us play the fiddle of your heartstrings. Okay. All right. Well, let us begin. So the theater is dark. There's the shuffle of people as they're getting to their seats, that sort of thing. And we're all kind of waiting with a bit of anticipation as the movie theater lights go down and everything fades to black. The first thing that happens is we start hearing the sounds of birds and insects. You know, beautiful little trills of finches and warblers and mockingbirds, just singing along. We hear a gentle breeze moving through the trees. You know, the gentle shift of grass and leaves and the gentle creak of a tree's branch. And we stay there for just a restful, peaceful few moments, just kind of taking in that sound. And then the screen cuts to life, jumps to life, and we're on a forest glade. And the air is just thick with that bloom scent as spring is giving way to the renewal of the forest. And the same moment, the steady, fast-paced strumming of a muted acoustic guitar started to play. And it's immediately matched as a pair of elk burst from the tree line. A charm of colorful finches burst from the undergrowth and scatter as the two masses of fur are in a dead run. And the song playing, I kind of like have like little soundtracks that I'll do. And the song I play, you guys can look up, is called Warm Shadow by Fink, F-I-N-K. So, Hedari, with whom are you running? And is this the first time you've ever shapeshifted into an elk?
Certainly not. No, this would be me running with my best friend Judith, as she is teaching me, you know, once again, helping me to hone my druidic abilities. And we are charging through the forest. We spent a great deal of time with the elk, and it was the easiest form for Hedari to learn to take. And so he and Judith are trotting around and kind of building that empathy that they have with the herd that they helped attend as, you know, they take on this form.
Now, when you first moved in or shifted into this form, and all the months and day and years that have followed since you've become more practiced at it, do you enjoy the pauses? Do you enjoy the runs? What do you enjoy most about being an elk?
I think, the camaraderie with nature, with my friends, that sense of being a part of the herd, something bigger and greater than what I could be on my own. It's exhilarating. There's a power there that is foreign to the human form. Something in that greater bestiality that attests to the wildness and the freedom of nature.
I think as you come out into the open, you've raced through the trees. Judith pulls up short, and I think you turn around to look at her, and she faces you. And in the way that the druids communicate, she's breathing heavy, and she says,
This is the joy that you will feel with your family. Do not fear for them, do not mourn for them, for they have safety within the herd. They have safety with us. I know what you need to do.
Yes, I know that you're right. I cannot say thank you enough, Judith. I could not do this if you were not here to be with them. I don't think I could go on without you, actually. You've been a constant friend to me and to my family, and I've known you for a very long time. And without you, there would be no venturing outward. There would be no finding a way to save them. And I know you'll take good care of them. You've always tended the herd well. I know they're in good hands. I thank you.
She bows her head a bit and steps forward and presses her forehead in between your antlers to match your head. And she says,
"You will have safety with us. You need not fear. And I am grateful for your friendship."
And she steps backward and she looks at you. These deep eyes, these knowing eyes,
says, "You are my friend. You are my brother. Wherever you go, you will always have a home with the herd. Now,"
she steps back and she says,
"Get up. Get up and hurry. Take my hand."
I think the scene fades. And it just kind of is this jarring fade, and the music that's been playing in the background kind of switches to this deep echo, and it starts to fade as well. And all of a sudden, the screen goes black and then comes back, and we see this mud-stained hand coming out to you, and we hear a voice saying, "Hadari, get up, take my hand." So which of your companions is reaching out to grasp your hand now?
I'm thinking it's probably Savona.
So, Savona, you are now, all three of you, all four of you, including Arthur, are in a tunnel running right now. There's everybody is breathing heavy. There's some blood. There's some bruises. There's this horrible clacking in the distance behind you in the tunnels. It's like two horns clacking together, and it's just kept pursuing you for the past several hundred feet as you've continued your descent into this tunnel. The halfling Arthur, this strange dark wizard, is up ahead.
"Come on, everybody, you have to get up. Get your arses up. We have to go."
And Savona, you're there helping Hadari up from to his feet.
Okay. I'm gonna push Hadari ahead of me. Do I see what's coming at us at all?
Give me a perception check.
That is a 23.
Ooh, nice roll.
So sharp. So your elf eyes stare up into that tunnel, that passageway that you guys have been running down. You had been caught unawares in a chamber before this. You've been solving riddles, and you've been solving these odd puzzle shapes, that sort of thing, to try and get through the last doorway, but something had followed you. And you look down the tunnel, and you see this shape. It's large. To say that it's roughly 7 or 8 feet at the shoulder would be roughly pretty accurate, considering your elf eye. And its lumbering, hunching form clamoring towards you, and every time it moves, there's that horrific, odd clacking, that bone-on-bone clacking sound. And just as you're about to consider maybe this is its normal movement, it begins to clamber onto the side of the tunnel and go upwards around the wall, and you see another shape behind it. And it's about 60 to 70 feet behind you and approaching.
We gotta run, Hadar, go! And then I just try to follow him.
Right, yes. I take off
KJ, what are you doing as you this? The halfling runs right past you, and his dark robes just blending into the darkness around you.
I'm keeping the rear, moving as fast as I can, but I'm trying to put myself between whatever's coming up behind us and my friends.
Good. Okay. So so keeping an eye back there. Go ahead and give me a perception check yourself, KJ.
All right. That's real good. That will be a 23.
Wow. Okay. So you see a similar thing, but when you see this sight, what does that inspire in you? Are you going to continue running with your friends? Are you looking to stop? What's your instinct?
My instinct is that right now we need to keep moving. Getting caught in a tunnel is not a good idea, and creeping at the back of his mind, he's remembering a similar time where he was running down a very, very darkly lit alley and something was chasing him, and he's having a weird kind of deja vu flashback moment, and he's gripping Darcy a lot harder than he normally would, and I'm gearing up because I know something's coming. And it's not going to be good.
Okay. Ian grins and makes a note of Dark Alley. So Hidari, you're moving on ahead. You have Savona right behind you. KJ is bringing up the rear. Both of the fighters very aware of these two hulking creatures that are coming after you. Arthur is up ahead. Just
keep moving. Keep moving your legs. If I can outrun you, that's a real crap shame, isn't it?
And so he's running and running and running.
Look up ahead. There's another door. There's another door. Hurry up. Move your horses.
So he's scampering up ahead. And his cloak is just, flapping behind you. So what do? You keep going, right?
I would probably yell to Arthur, can't you do anything? You're a wizard.
All right. Yeah, I can make myself disappear and leave you all behind. That's what I could do. How about that? You want me to do that, you little elfling?
So he's like going up to the door and he's starting to be, I'm looking at the door. Just wait. She's starting to look. And so he's at this doorway. As you guys catch up to him, This door has it's very similar to the one that you saw at the very beginning of this. The spidering lines of what seem like kind of carved power going towards the center in this half sphere that's in the middle, denoting what he's called the obsidian forge that lies within. And as you get up there, his hands touch onto this sphere. There's another sphere in the middle, and he touches it, and instantly there's this chime that occurs, and it rings out, and it lights the sphere. The sphere provides a little bit of light into this dark cavern. And as you look around, you see that the tunnel that you've been going down, that's about 10 feet across, maybe 10, 15 feet high, has opened up into this kind of antechamber that's about 20 feet across. And the door is gigantic, and it is carved with those similar lines, but in addition, you see figures that are standing and they're looking upwards. And he touches the sphere and you have that light occur. So what do?
I spin and put my back to the door and watch and try to see whatever is coming.
Okay. Adari?
I roll my eyes. Oh, I am so sick of puzzles. Can't you open it, Arthur?
I'm trying. I'm trying. There's something here.
Yes, there's something back there too.
No pressure here, huh? Hey, where's the elfling? Come up here. You solve that last one right quick. Get up here.
All right.
You go, Savannah. I'll watch the back.
Okay.
I've got your back, KJ.
That clacking is just continuing as it's like coming closer, and so, give me an investigation.
Okay.
Check. Savona, let's see what you can uncover.
It's a 14.
Okay. So as you as you look at this sphere, you're seeing within it, there's something that's moving. It looks like it's a whole bunch of like little pinpoint lights that are kind of swirling around. And as Arthur is touching this, you're starting to see that his hands are beginning to glow with this dark color, and it's like a dark purplish color, and it's swirling and beating and thrumming as the sphere comes to life, and you're starting to see that light starting to kind of thrum all around you. And there's something that's up above his head that he can't quite see that's thrumming in time with it, and it looks to be like a small shape of a lizard or maybe a dragon's head of some kind.
Arthur, are you making that above you happen?
What are you talking about? I'm a halfling. I never look up.
some sort of like lizardy type thing above you, and I assumed it was some dark crap you were doing, but I think it has something to do with the door.
What really has? Something like all the stuff I'd done is crap all the way. We're all alive, aren't we?
And so he looks up and he's like, I don't. He focuses more on the sphere and the. All right. There's.
Okay, maybe that's what I need to focus. Okay.
He starts like really channeling in, and you see that same kind of smoky power of magic that's kind of came out of his hands at the onset of this when he first opened the doors. But this time, the smoky tendrils that come out of his hands are also suffused with those pinpoints of light as well. They kind of swirl around. It's almost like something you've seen at night in the nighttime sky. And as he does this, the dragon head starts to come to life, and it says the following:
"We come at night without being fetched. We disappear by day. Without being stolen, what are we?"
Oh, stars! It's stars! Hadari says as he's facing away.
Good. Stars?
So the dragon, the face bows and recedes into the flat surface of the door, and we start to see the door begin to open. The sphere rotates in on itself and then rotates away, and the door starts to split open like this. This was pretty fast, so that's good. So the creatures are starting to continue running rapidly after you, trying to catch up with you, and you hear that clicking and the sound of their bone, kind of bone on bone clacking, and they're starting to hear the slavering. And they're just coming. You see one again kind of roll around the top of the tunnel and start to come around next to its mate as it's coming at you. And you see these kind of raptor-like eyes that are slits along the front of the face. And as the light of the door catches the glimpse of them, you see what looks almost like bird beaks or bird faces that are on them. And they run forward like almost like apes, like big giant gorillas, and the front of their arms are these ginormous claws, and these hooked claws as they come towards you, digging at the ground, coming at you. Let's roll initiative.
Oh no.
Oh yes.
All right. I can get behind that.
All right.
Okay. I'm using roll 20 to do my dice. Hear the little whoop in the background. Okay, so I got an 11. So what do we have?
I got a 19.
19?
I got a 17.
Nice. I got a 17 as well.
Nice. Oh, and I guess I should roll for good old Arthur, huh? Why not? Okay, Arthur got a 7. Oh boy. Okay. Oh, no. So visualizing a little bit where we are, you've got Arthur at the door. You've got Savona next to him, studying it, seeing it come open. You have Hadari, who's kind of right behind them, facing outward towards the tunnel. You called stars over your shoulder. And then you have KJ with Darcy waiting for whatever is to come. So 19 is first. What do you do?
soon as I see that door open, I'm probably going to turn and try to shoot with my longbow at whatever the closest thing is, you know, not really still really knowing what they are, otherwise just knowing that they are aggressive and terrifying looking.
Yeah, they are not here to share pamphlets, that's for sure. All right. Okay, so yeah, let's let it rip. You've got your shooting action, and then you have your move action, and whatever bonus action you would like to apply as well.
That was a 12.
Wow. All right. So I think the arrow sails off. It spears right towards the lead one. The lead one is it's right there, but it ducks its head, and the arrow just grazes off of its shoulder, and you see that it's almost not kind of bony on the shoulder, like on the back shoulder blades. As you see it kind of moving and flexing its shoulders, you see that it's got kind of like almost a chitinous back up there. But unfortunately, it's a miss. It grazes off of him. But what do you do for your move action? What would you like?
I'm probably gonna back up and eventually be helping Arthur open push it open and just be backing up into that next room, because think at that point I'm like, I don't know what this is, and I don't think we have a chance.
Yeah, and I think the door has opened far enough that you can back your way in. So do you want to go into the doorway or just inside the doorway on the into the next room?
Yeah, just inside the doorway, I think.
Okay.
Just backing. I'm still facing towards the threat. I just want to back up.
No, that's good. That's good. Okay, who's up next?
Kyle, what's your initiative modifier?
Plus 2.
That's the same as me.
Oh. Shall we have a gentleman's agreement, or do we need a roll-off?
Let's roll off.
All right.
Rule off it is.
There are no gentlemen here.
It's a little more fun that way.
All right.
Yes. Oh,
perfect.
You probably did better than me.
It's a 16 on the dice.
That's a 7 on the die. So,
All right. So, Hidari's going to mutter under his breath, "Oh, finally a stupid puzzle I can solve. Thank the gods." And he's going to just kind of whip his hand down, and a little flash of arcane energy is going to appear as a knife of solid ice appears in his hand, and he's going to throw it at the nearest creature.
Oh, that's
casting
so
ice
hot.
Knife.
Yes. Oh, unfortunately, my dice aren't quite as hot anymore. That's only a 12.
Oh, shoot. Okay. Yes. Yeah, I think like as you throw this thing, and you can hear the clacking of the creature behind me. The ice shard goes straight at it. And unfortunately, it brings up one of its forearms, where this bony hook is just leaping out of it like a scythe, and it just knocks the dagger out of the way. It just crushes it, and it continues charging forward.
They do, however, the after effect of the spell is everyone within 5 feet has to make a dex save or potentially still take damage because the ice explodes on impact.
Oh, no.
Yes. I love it. I love it. I'm into it. Okay. So that'll be both of these guys.
All right.
So, okay. First one rolls a 2. That is not going to be sufficient. Second one is a 12.
My save DC is 14.
Oh, they both take damage. Nice. All right. What
so
do we
that
got?
Is going to be, let me see here, make sure I've got this right. 2d6 cold damage.
2d6. Nice.
Okay, not a ton. 4 points of cold damage.
All right, and they take a full, right? Because they missed?
Yes.
Awesome. Yep. Love it. Okay. Solid lead in. That's really good. All right, you got some movement, Hidari. What do you want to do with it?
I am also going to step back just a little bit, but I'm kind of caught between the... I'm watching KJ to know, like, are we standing and fighting, or are we running? I'm watching his back. So I'm going to move back probably about 10 feet and then hold there.
Okay, move back 10 feet. So that's going to put you like right into the doorway, not quite through
it. Okay.
Not quite out of it. So is that okay with you?
Maybe I'll go about 5 then. So,
okay,
not
so right outside of the doorway. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yep. Still on the same side of the door there.
Copy that. All right, cool. All right, next up, I think that's going to be our barbarian. What are you doing, man?
Are we staying and fighting, or are we going through that door? That's, I'm going to kind of say that over my shoulder, and they're not within melee attack range, right?
No, they're at about, they're at 20 feet right now.
Yeah, I'm going to hold an action.
Okay.
And as soon as they get within melee range, I'll start swinging. But until that point, I'm just going to keep urging them, get through the door, get through the door, get through the door.
All right, cool. All right, dig it. All right, so you have done that. That is going to bring us to... That's going to bring us to the triggering of your action as these two creatures come lumbering forward. The first one is coming at you, and it's got these massive forelegs that are going to come up and try and smash into you, KJ. So give them the what for.
All right. That is, I'm going to do...
Are you raging right now, or are you...
I am about to, yes. I am going to rage.
Okay. Let's say like before you readied your action, you bonus action raged.
Okay.
And then that'll kick that in.
All right.
There's nothing I love more than a barbarian raging.
Yeah. So KJ's just going to see this thing coming and just grip down on Darsh. She's like, batters up. And he's got a reckless great weapon master going to swing home on this thing.
Oh, man. So that gives you advantage on the attack, right?
It does.
Okay.
All right. So... Natural 16 on the die for the first.
Okay.
Natural 12. So that is... okay, so Great Weapon Master 16. So that is a plus 6 to hit. So that's a 22 minus 5. So that is a 17 to hit.
Okay. That is a hit.
Sweet. Okay. So then that is 1d8. Minimum damage. Okay. Plus 5. Plus 4 is 5 plus 10, so that's 15 points of damage.
Dang. Nice. That is really cool. So where do you connect with this thing? Is it on its face, its chest? I mean, what are you doing?
I'm swinging for the mandibles. Like, I'm swinging right at the stupid mouth and just trying to punish this thing.
Okay. All right, cool. Let's see here. Then we have our guys here. So this creature is going to, you hit him like solid, like it was a good hit. It cracked across its face, and you see part of its beak start to kind of shatter a bit. You see it break in as Darcy goes across it.
Fantastic.
And it rears up in utter hatred and shrieks, and then comes down with these two hooks. We'll see what happens.
All right.
Whop. All right. Okay. The first swing is a 9.
Okay. Is that with you're rolling with advantage?
A 10 with advantage.
Okay.
The second hook comes around and unfortunately gets a 20 with advantage.
All right. That'll hit.
Hit. Okay. Let's see. See what we do. All right, that is 15 points of piercing damage.
Okay, halved down to 8, correct?
There you go.
All perfect. Right.
No, actually 7.
7? Okay.
Yeah, we'll round down for these.
Sweet. I appreciate that, benevolent DM.
Don't call me that yet. All right, so the second one comes up, and let's see. What's it going to do? Let me get smart enough to do this. No, it's not. A -1 result is not smart enough to not go after the Dari, but first accepting an attack of opportunity from the barbarian.
Yes.
Because you're so small, it went around its compadre to try and go in for the druid, but did not take into account the gnomish fury.
All right. It's a natural 19 on the die.
Yes. Oh. That's a hit.
And... That is 9 points of... Oh, wait. Oops, I forgot. 9 plus 2. So on the first hit there, that should have been 2 more points to that.
Okay.
I'm raging. I forgot to add my rage damage. That is 11 points of damage on the attack of opportunity.
Nice. All right, that is an excellent connection. All right, so it is going to continue towards Hidari and it's going to attempt to attack. Now that it's got some fresh hot damage, it's now fresh hot mad. And it is going to, let's see if it hits. No advantage on this. All right, the 21.
Yes.
21 hits. Okay. Let's see what he does. See what he does. All right, so that hook comes in and takes a swipe and takes 12 points of piercing damage on you.
Ouch.
Okay. All right. That is that round. And then now we have our diminutive friend, Arthur. He sees these things, and he says,
"What are you doing? What are you doing? Get back! Get back! Get in here! Let's go!"
And he's going to take that level two, and he arches a hand outward, and these missiles of arcane energy leap out from him, and impact on the one that just hit a Hidari, and that is going to be 11 points. All right, cool. All right, so that he impacts, and then he goes into the chamber, and he actually runs right past you, Sivana, as he plunges into the next room.
Come on, get in here!
I'm not leaving them behind!
Okay.
he's starting to kind of like back up.
If you want to go back in there, go ahead. I'll close the door.
What?
And that's the top of the round. Here we go. with Savona, as you react to his announcement.
I hate him so much. Okay, so I'm going to... There are two or three of them. I'm forgetting.
Two.
There are two. Okay. So I'm going to try to aim up on the one that's been going at Hidari as well, because he seems like the one that's the most in danger currently. And right. I'm going to use Ensnaring Strike.
Nice. Okay.
When I shoot at him, so...
Talk to me about Ensnaring Strike. What does that do?
Yeah, so Ensnaring Strike, if I manage to hit it, vines shoot out of the arrow and basically entangle it and tie it up. It has to make a strength save, but hopefully if it works, it'll be restrained until it can burst out of those.
Okay. All right, let's have it.
Okay, that is a 23.
That's a hit.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So.
Okay.
Now, do you have what's your ranger specialty? Did you take Colossus Slayer or did you take
What? I think I took Hordebreaker.
Hordebreaker. Okay. All right. Just wanted to make sure. Okay. So yeah. So let's roll your damage. I owe you a strength check.
Yep.
Let's see. How he does. That's a. Does he have disadvantage on this for any reason?
He shouldn't. No, I don't think so.
Okay. All right. That's a 23.
Gosh darn it. Yeah. No. Those vines just shrivel.
Okay. All right. So it like carves at the vines and stuff. But your arrow has struck true. Okay. So you got the damage on that.
Okay. And that will be 9 points of damage.
Nice. All right. And this is the one that's on Hidari, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. All right, what's your move action? What are you doing? And what's your retort to the halfling, if any, or to your friends?
At this point, I'm just going to ignore him, and I'm going to end up moving forward because I'm not leaving them.
Okay. All right. So stepping up, bringing the bow with you. You're going to continue with the longbow?
I think for now, yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool. Next up, do we want to roll off again, or do we want to just go straight to Hidari?
Hidari can go ahead.
All righty. So where does that put Savona now in relationship to me? Like, how close?
I think she's off your back shoulder, maybe, say, 10 feet. Sound fair?
Yeah, okay. That sounds about right.
Okay.
All right, cool. So and then how far in front of me is KJ?
KJ is probably another 10 feet in front of you with a creature right in front of him.
So and all
you got your... Beard.
The one right up in my face.
You got you got Huggy Bear right in front of you.
All right.
Huggy Beak? I guess he's got a beak.
Huggy
so.
Beak, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so I am going to, I'm going to mutter another incantation, and I am going to have to reach down for one of my other guidebooks for a second.
Okay. It gets an attack opportunity for you. No, I'm just kidding.
you can try. I am going to mutter another quick phrase under my breath and cast Primal Savagery, which is a cantrip from Xanathar's Guide. So all of a sudden, Hidari's hands and fingernails start to elongate and turn into claws that kind of ooze this drippy green acid, and he just goes in for a claw strike against this thing.
I'm into it. Let's do it.
You have claws, so do I.
Nice.
Good lines.
Luckily, so these are hooks.
So, unfortunately, I can't roll on my attacks to save my life tonight all of a sudden. That's going to be a 14 to hit is all.
Okay. Unfortunately, no. That does not hit. Now, does that ability, does that spell last for your next attack?
No, it's just I make the attack and then I return to normal.
Okay. All right.
So it's just a cantrip.
Roll a wisdom save for this thing. Interesting. Okay. All right. It eyes the poison with its sharp predatory bird-like eyes. Okay. AJ, talk to me about this hammer of yours, this Darcy.
This whole experience is leading him back to the back alley of a seedy tavern. He's been away from his family for just a little bit, and it was not a happy parting, and it was not a planned parting, but he had to leave fast. And he remembers, after he connects with this thing's stupid mouth, he remembers that breaking sound, and he remembers this. It recalls this memory of shattering bottles behind him as he's thrown into an alley, and he lands in this kind of back kind of box where they've been throwing out glass and that had shattered and things. And he's scrambling around trying to find things, and he remembers just kind of reaching for anything and coming across a keg hammer that they use to put stoppers and things into the keg. And as the boys who were trying to get all over him turn in, they do not see this, and he remembers swinging upwards in just a swinging uppercut and connecting with the jaw and shattering the jaw of the boy that was chasing him, and then standing, and then immediately he's right back where he is, swinging into this thing. Reckless Great Weapon Master swinging again.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Take inspiration. Well, you already have inspiration. Never mind.
I'm actually, I'm already at advantage, so I'm going to have to use that quick.
And Hidari, if you don't already have inspiration, mark that for your interaction at the beginning.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's only going to be an 11 with Great Weapon Master.
Okay, so yeah, so I think that, you know, that whole like visceral memory is just kind of swirling in your mind's eye, and as you're swinging across to and you feel like you're almost connecting with the same person in that back alley. Unfortunately, that person is a couple of feet shorter than this horror that's looming over you. And I think with your first hit against it, it did not want to experience that again, so it kind of raises its head out of the way and it starts snapping its beak towards you. Okay. So that brings us to... What did that bring us to? Is that me? Is it my turn?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I believe so. I think you are in swinging mode against me.
All of a sudden, dramatic music plays and somebody jumps in. Indiana Jones. No, I'm kidding. Okay, so this creature that's in front of Hidari, it looks down at the at your hand that poison that's still kind of dripping and or not the poison, the acid that's dripping and hitting the ground in front of it. It's still kind of hissing a little bit as your hand reshapes back to where it was. And it looks down at you, and it actually takes a step back. And it swipes at you. And I'm going to have it swipe at disadvantage because it failed its wisdom save. Crap, that's an 18. Does that still hit?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It's lashing out in fear. All right, well, rolled low. 8 points of piercing damage.
All right,
as
all
that
right.
hook scrapes across you, and it backs up, like seemingly like it's trying to leave. So it's actually trying to move away from you. So you're going to get an attack of opportunity on this thing. So why don't you go ahead and strike out with what you got handy?
I will do so. That would probably be my quarterstaff. So,
okay. Hey, that's an actual hit. So that's going to be an 18.
That's a hit.
All right. 3 points of damage.
Nice. All right. So you give it a good crack across the mid. Or where do you hit it when you're swiping at him?
Considering I've been casting the spells, I've probably kind of got the quarterstaff off to the side with my offhand. So I'm just going to bring it up and kind of club it up right up underneath the chin as it's nice. Trying to kind of back away from me.
Yeah, and it was kind of focusing on where the acid was dripping, and it's looking down, and I don't think it didn't come up with the idea, oh my gosh, I'm about to get hit. And so it just, boom, just like right in the face, and it lumbers backwards. KJ, yours is not so unsettled. Because it feels like, oh, okay, well, it missed me. I'm going to try and get him again.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, so it's going to come at you. Ooh, but an 8 is going to miss.
Is that with advantage?
13 is going to miss.
Yes, it will. AC 15.
All right. Okay, it's going to swipe at you one more time. It's not electing to move. And with advantage, you said, 21?
21 hits.
Okay, so that hook digs into you for 11 points, so half that, 5.
Okay.
All right. So the other one is kind of like moving and lumbering and trying to get to the side, is trying to like move adjacent away from the melee as it's staring at Hidari. And it's like swiping its big hook towards him and like digging into the ground. And it's making these kind of this mixture of grunting and bird-like calls towards its companion. And then I think its companion is still there. It's looking over and it's snapping at it and saying, you know, look in the face, you know, get back into the fight, that sort of thing. And it's facing off with KJ. Top of the round, 3, everybody's still standing. That's a good sign. Oh, and Arthur is doing something to the door right now. So we'll see what happens there.
Dang. All right. KJ,
thought I'd throw that in there.
How tall are you, roughly, to me?
3'4".
Okay, so that's, like, what, about my hip?
Yeah, give or take.
How broad are your shoulders?
Actually reasonably broad. He's a rock gnome. Like, he's probably, or he's 3.5 feet tall, he's probably 1.5 to almost 2 feet wide, so, like, he's stocky.
Okay.
Nice.
Okay. I'm gonna do something.
Okay.
Go with it.
Go with it. What can
I'm
possibly
excited.
Go wrong?
Wait.
Okay, I'm gonna drop the bow, and I'm gonna pull out my axes, and I'm gonna be like, KJ, brace yourself, and I'm gonna run forward and like try to like jump off of your shoulder,
okay,
to attack the thing in front of you.
Oh man, I love this.
I like acrobatics.
Number one, take inspiration for making this awesome maneuver. Number two, I want you to roll an acrobatics check for me.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead and do that.
That is fair.
And KJ, I'm not going to have you roll anything because you're already kind of beasting out. So
it was not good. It was an 8.
You could burn your inspiration that you just
That's
got.
True, I could. I might.
So, well,
you don't need to call it ahead of time, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can call it for your attack. The reason I had you roll is to see if you could take advantage of the extra height and get advantage on your attack.
Gotcha.
But it's just going to be a normal attack. You don't stumble or anything. I would say if you rolled a 1, then maybe you run straight into KJ or something like that. But in this case, I think like you get a good purchase on him. You hop over him, but you don't get all your weight behind the jump. But you're coming at him, axes flailing, in your own macabre versions of mechanical hooks.
Okay, cool. All right. That's a 16.
Okay, that's a hit.
Oh, yes.
That makes me happy. Okay, that's 4 points of damage.
4 points of damage. Excellent. Mm. Okay. And then are you going to go with the offhand? Or?
Yeah, I would like to. If that's,
all right, let's offhand this thing. Give him the backhand. There's the taste of me backhands.
Hey, that's not bad. That's 18 plus 4 is a 22.
That's a hit. Okay. I don't even need the 4. You can just tell the 4 to go take a break. 18's enough.
You have the day off.
You have the day off. Way to go.
Okay, and that's 5 points of damage.
Nice. Okay. So, yeah, so where do you strike this thing as you're coming at it?
I think as I'm coming at it, I'm just gonna be, I'm just like in work mode, and I'm just hacking at the head, just because I figure if I can try to blind it somehow, that would be best.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. I think that actually happens. I think that as you're coming at it, you strike out at its head. You've gotten just enough height to get up there on its dome, and you bring your axes down, and it strikes at its eyes, and it's not liking that at all. Okay, that is going to bring us to Hidari. Hidari, you have one oddly shaken creature in front of you who looks to try to retreat, but then you have the other one who's still up in KJ and now Savona's grip.
Seeing my friends appear to have made the decision to stand and fight, I am going to go ahead and use my action to cast Barkskin. Okay. So muttering another incantation, and then suddenly my skin starts to turn into kind of more of a woody texture. And then with my bonus action, will transform into a cave bear, or a brown bear, rather. Sorry, I keep mixing up, like, tougher versions of bears from D&D and Skyrim.
I turned myself into a cave troll. Wait, that's not even close. At least you have bear in the other one. Cool. All
this
right.
Dungeon
so
is
you
cursed.
Are now this
troll bears. Ugh,
give me the bear. I love it. Ugh, awesome. Okay. So yeah. So you, all of a sudden you shapeshift into this bear, and I think that actually makes the creature that's already a little fearful of you step back even further. Give me an insight check on this, because okay. You're not going to attack, right? This is your whole thing, right?
Yeah, so that would be my whole action.
All of a sudden, you have this bear cunning. You have this mixture of trying to understand what the hell is going on here.
That's going to be a 15 for the insight.
Beautiful. Okay. This creature that's backing away from you recognizes something in you. And it's fearful of it. Maybe respectful. Not quite sure. All right, next up, KJ.
Talk to me. After so, Savona just came over the top of me at this thing, right?
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah,
he
used you as a step stool. Sorry.
Yeah. Hearing that, KJ is just kind of smirk, and with that memory of the alleyway in mind, he's going to take a half step back, double hand it, and swing the thing like a golf club in just a full roundhouse. Motion to try to just clock this thing up underneath the chin.
Oof,
I'm gonna do reckless, not great weapon master.
Okay, all right, gotcha.
That's a natural 20.
Oh my gosh, yes! The first one of the night. Let us celebrate. All praises to the 20. Let's have the damage. Come on, right. Double it up. Love it.
Okay, so that's double the die. So that was a 5 rolled, so 10 points of damage. Plus 4 is 14, plus 2 is 16 points of damage.
Hey, describe to me how you kill this thing. And you talked about the uppercut, but what does it look like as the hammer delivers the final blow?
As the hammer connects, there's this, you hear just this, oh, Ashley, plug your ears. You hear what almost sounds like breaking glass and twigs, but you realize that it's the teeth shattering.
Oh, no.
And you hear that initial shatter, and then you hear the subsequent kind of sucking sound of the hammer hitting into the soft underside of the jaw, and you just hear the sitting click as it goes up into it and just hits it, just kind of drives his jaw through into its brain.
Oof.
That was awesome, but I'm gonna have nightmares about it.
That will do it. Okay. Yeah, you lay this thing out. It raises up, and I think the bulk and weight of it, it just kind of boom, and then just kind of collapses down in front of you.
Now, question for you. Am I within melee range of the other one? Because I haven't used any movement, and because... hold on, I need to double check with you. So, Great Weapon Master, do I have to have used the Great Weapon Master feat to benefit from getting the on a critical or a 0 point reduction, getting the to make one melee attack as a bonus action? I forget if I have to have used the feat for that or if I get it just by nature of having the feat.
Oh, man. All right. I'm gonna throw out my disclaimer here that in the normative pace of narrative, I try to avoid digging into the rules too much. So at the risk of alienating any fans that are listening to me at all and not alienating your current fans, I'm going to say that you are within movement speed or distance to get to him, and that, yes, you can go ahead and lay into this other one.
Okay, and feeling that, I'm actually going to burn my inspiration die on this, and I'm going to come again, just kind of turn around and just like and just go for it at this guy.
Gosh.
First one's a natural 19.
All right. Come on, get that 20.
Natural 11 on the die. So, right. Again, that was reckless. Not great okay. Weapon Master because I didn't call it. So that is 1d10. 3 plus 4 is 7 plus 2 is 9 points of damage.
9 points. All right. You I don't think this thing was really seeing you coming at it at all because it's focused on Hidari right now. But yeah, you crack across it. It's not quite down, but I think like you bring your hammer across its face and it's righteously stunned. And it kind of collapses down on its four hooks. The two front legs, so it's all on all fours as it's trying to back away, and it's growling and snapping, but it's also just got whacked in the head. So yeah,
sweet.
That's gonna bring up who's next? That's gonna be the halfling, right? Mm-hmm. Or no, it's gonna be this thing. Okay, this guy. I think it shakes its head and it looks to Hidari in bear form for a moment, and it paws the ground or it hooks the ground a bit and digs up some dirt, but then it is going to use its disengage action and it is going to turn and flee, running the other way as it hooks kind of clatter off of rocks and stuff, and it continues to rush away, and it starts to kind of do that thing where it's going up onto the up into the wall and onto the roof and clamber away.
Now, remind me on disengage. So that's from all attack actions, right? Or is that only with the opponent that it is in combat with?
I think it's all, but this one I can actually look up pretty quick. So let's take a look, make sure.
Sorry, not trying to be the rules
no,
lawyer.
Not at all. Please, if you can take him down, might as well take him down. I'm all for it. All right, disengage. If you take the disengage action, your movement doesn't provoke opportunity attacks for the rest of the turn.
Okay,
so
that's what I remember, but just wanted to double check.
Yeah, no worries. Let's do the check. And this show is about helping people learn to play D&D, so it's always good to check the rules out from time to time. All right, well done. I think at this stage we're out of combat. That sense of crazy urgency, well, it was generated by these creatures, but I think now it's starting to re-engage because the doors are starting to close.
Agathon!
That's right. That's
right, Arthur, so help me.
I'm going to run towards the door and put my shoulder into it.
That's definitely not going to do it. The doors are about this thick. And I'm holding my hands about a foot and a half apart from each other.
Get through the door! Get through the door! So help me, I'm gonna smack this halfling so hard!
You see his head poke through the opening. He goes, "Hurry up and get through the door! It's closing, don't you know? Hurry up before more of those things come along."
I'm charging right towards it.
Oh, cripes! He jumps out of the way. He hops out of the way.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to snag my bow as I try to run into the door myself.
Yep, and I'm running immediately behind her.
Behind. All right, go ahead. All right, so yeah, so that door is just kind of goom, 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 and it just kind of collapses in on itself. No, I'm kidding. It does seal up with a mighty stone thump, and you are all plunged into a very, very deep darkness that is only broken by a single light that's about 30 feet away So 30 feet straight through the doors. Like, so if you came through the doors ahead of you, it would have been straight ahead. There's this, it's a stone plinth that's rising up from the ground, and there's this red light that's coming from it. Almost like, I don't know, kind of like a lantern of some kind. But that's the only light you see. The rest of this place is incredibly dark. And this is actually surprising for those of you who have dark vision.
Gods, I can't see anything.
I'm
going to
sniff the air a little bit. Can I smell anything?
Give me a perception check.
All right. So I get advantage because of the bear's keen senses. So that's going to be a total of 17 on that perception.
All right. So, yeah, you start looking around and you realize that the reason that there's so much darkness in here, because it was just so sudden, is that you're in another tunnel that's leading down towards this light, this lantern that's down ahead of you. It's kind of a slight decline as it goes ahead of you. And you don't quite see the walls around you as much as you feel it and you smell it. The smell of air that's been sitting for too long. It's this kind of stale and oppressive air. And it's just, this is not the place you want to be as a bear. You need space. You need other things. Caves are one thing, but this is altogether wholly different.
What can we see?
What's that boy? About?
Berdari, what do you see?
Berdari.
There's a part of me that so wishes that animals, the whole animal talking perk from Pathfinder was a thing in 5e as a druid.
and the interesting thing too is that as your eyes are kind of adjusting to it, the only thing you're really picking up is the reflection of that lantern in each other's eyes. So it kind of gives like this almost kind of creepy feel of just the barest picture of each other's faces. So yeah, how are you going to communicate this, Hadari? What do the rest of you want to do as you're looking around? Start with
her. I'm going to kind of like look back and forth to the other members of my party and then kind of like move over towards where I can see one of them and kind of nudge them with my nose and kind of do a head swirl sort of thing. and then do my best imitation in this form of kind of a dog point and just kind of point down towards the light.
So I think like you feel like Hidari's paw kind of brushes your hip, KJ, and you feel him kind of directing in a certain direction. Yeah. So what are you doing, KJ? You're kind of surrounded by this darkness, except for that pinpoint of light up ahead or kind of down in the head.
Just as he's kind of coming down out of the rage, he's just kind of the bear touching him just kind of freaks him out for just a second. Berdari, do not do that when I am not expecting it. That way? That way? Okay, let's make our way down that way quietly, Arthur.
Hi, I'm here.
Next time, tell us before you do that. Otherwise, there will be problems.
I told you that I was going through the door.
You told us you were going through the door. You didn't say anything about closing it. You left that out.
You got me there. You got me there. That's a truth. That's a true statement, lad. That's a true one.
Another true statement. Watch yourself, or you won't make it out of here.
Hey, okay. We're all have an agreement here. You're just here to help me out, and I'll make sure that I'm here to help you. I told you, I'd be the one to help you, what I can. Let's all continue, huh?
So you guys are, so what are you doing, Savona? How are you handling the darkness?
It's making me real uncomfortable. I'm probably digging through my pack looking for a torch and some flint and something to try to provide some more light, because able to see is making me hella uncomfortable.
Yeah, no worries. that's what I like. you get your flint and steel out and you strike it to turn on the torch and ignite it, and the flames come about, and the spark, the initial swirl of flame, it acts more like liquid as it emerges from the torch head, from the oiled wrapped cloth around this throwaway piece of wood. And it comes to life in a traditional orange color, but then it starts to swirl into like a yellowish color, a little bit more golden. And the light comes out and it stops after maybe about a foot. And then it just, it's like something is keeping it from going out a great distance. It's trying. It's almost like you feel like these liquid fire tendrils are trying to reach out and poke at some kind of invisible barrier to provide more light, but it just can't. There's this weird, caged, living feeling about the fire that's at the top of the torch.
If I put my hand up like near it, does it feel now warm?
Yeah, it's hot.
Okay, it is hot. I wasn't sure if it was still acting like normal fire.
Well, that part.
Confidence inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
as the light kind of, you're moving the torch a little bit, and you see that there's a wall that's next to you, and there seems to be like some kinds of like carvings in the wall, depictions of some kind.
Okay, I'll stop and I'll nudge KJ and Hadari, and I'll ignore Arthur still, and I'll try to, you know, bring their attention to these carvings. What do you think those are?
Gonna walk up and just kind of touch them if I can reach them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They line the tunnel wall, and in fact, the passages that you've gone through, like over the last, I don't know, you've been descending for a while, you've been heading downwards for a while. But this is like the first time where you're starting to feel like actual stone work. It's not been overgrown with moss, that sort of thing. So your hands start to kind of trace along these bas reliefs of seems like standing figures, that sort of thing. There's some kind of odd writing that's on there.
Can I look at it and see if I can read it?
Yeah, sure. Remind me, what languages do you speak?
Not many. Gnomish? And common.
I speak gnomish, angry, common. Well, there is there's something that's almost akin to gnomish. Give me an intelligence check or intelligence save. I said it's one and the same for a barbarian.
intelligence save. That's a natural 2 on the die, so 5.
It's similar to the way the fire is kind of slippery. The language is a little bit slippery in your mind. You're trying to remember it and think of it. You almost think that you see the word like the word meeting or meet or gathering, something like that. That's in Gnomish, but it's just not quite there.
I can almost read this. I don't... It's some...
I'm going to lumber up behind KJ and take a look. I also, as it were, speak gnomish, so for whatever that's worth.
Well, what other languages do you speak?
Elvish, Druidic, and Common.
Okay. So you're looking at this, and the... I think what draws you, because you're thinking in a bear form now, right? So you've got some instinctive type things that you're seeing first, and I think your eyes, you see the restrained light is kind of giving these baleful shadows across these figures, and you see what looks like tall, thin-bodied figures that would almost seem elvish, but they're very stylized. And these figures are moving down along the wall. They're walking along the wall, and each of them are carrying something. They're some have crates between them. Others have what looks like plants of some kind. Others have what looks like weapons. And then you see the writing. You see the writing, and it speaks. It's almost like a blending of gnomish and druidic. There's something older to it, something distantly related to this language. And as you read through it, go ahead and give me, let's see, you have an arcana, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, everybody has arcana. Well, I mean, you can, you know, but specifically for you, you have some...
Sort of. Technically, I have an arcana bonus of 0, but you know.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and give me an arcana check.
All right. Natural 16.
Oh, very good. Okay. So as you're looking at this, you see what seems like this is the path to the forge. We arrive separate. We came separate. But together, we shall leave this place.
What is it, Hadari?
I'm going to cast... one of the two spells that I can cast, and I'm going to cast Speak with Animals.
Nice.
Thank you.
What are you doing? You're doing that thing again.
You'll get used to it.
Why can't he just shift back into his normal self?
Hadari, what did you read? You seem like you picked something up that I didn't.
Says, essentially, this is the path to the forge. We arrive separate. We came separate. Together, we leave. Something along those lines.
Huh.
So, clearly, what we're looking for is this way. Also, thank you. I really didn't want to shift back.
It's okay. We definitely just... We need to make sure that we're talking and making sure that we can understand. So, I gathered we needed to... make sure that you could be heard. So I'm going to turn around and convey to you exactly what he said. Continue on this path to the forge. We came together, we leave separate, right? Or did I flip that?
Right.
That's right.
So a bunch of people showed up separately and left. That sounds really culty to me.
Yeah, he's responding, and you hear Hadari.
I really hate this. Arthur?
Hi.
Can you make any sense of this? Is there any lore or anything that you'd be familiar with that would know of a forge and...
That's what we're here for. We're here for the Onyx Forge. That's exactly why... Or the Obsidian Forge. That's exactly why we're here.
No, I get that. But what does that have to do with, like, unity and large groups of people showing up? Do these carvings mean anything to you? Is this familiar?
He looks at it, you know, kind of squinting. He actually reaches up to your hand and has you, like, move the torch a little bit closer so he can see. And he looks at it, and
I don't know. It just looks like a bunch of elves that are doing what elves do. You know, just gathering together and doing all their things and giving things to each other.
Yeah, you're right. That's entirely what our existence is about. That's all we do. We have absolutely no unique identity ourselves. And I just push past him because I'm annoyed.
Hi, easy.
Now you're not giving me a lot of courtesy there.
It's just doing what elves do.
KJ's gonna turn and in beast speech, like,
what are you doing? He's like brushing himself off on the face.
I'm gonna lick him in the face.
I leave it out. Look, yeah, I'm tolerating you as much as I can. I just need your help to get down here. Honor your end of the bargain, get me the orb, and we'll call the squires, and you guys can stay down here and investigate to your heart's content.
We'll go at our own pace, thank you, and you'll get your freaking orb.
Fine. Let's go. Let's keep going. Savona, why don't you give me an insight check?
Okay. That's a 10.
10, okay. Yeah, I mean, he's getting a little excited.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, something is kind of like getting him, I mean, he's been excited before when he first came in through the door at mm-hmm. the top of this whole mess. But as things had kind of gone on, he was getting a little bit more fearful. He was getting a little bit more nervous, but now that excitement has started to come back. So that's what you're noticing about him.
Okay. As far as our placement is concerned, you know, how are we situated right now?
I think he's kind of, you stepped ahead a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
This is something you noticed before you turned away, and he's probably like about 5 or 10 feet after you. And then, KJ and Hidari are about to go along.
Okay.
So he's maybe like, they're like maybe a 5 feet, another 5 feet back.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. All right. So yeah, you continue to descend. It's a very gentle slope downwards as you continue. You notice that it's become more and more stone, less dirt. It's actually paved stone that you can tell. You know, obviously you have to kind of like bring this torch down to see it, and then as you get to what looks like an archway up ahead of you, as soon as you cross the plane into the archway, and I'll ask you, do you go ahead and proceed into the room, or do you stop?
I'm probably going to stop and wait for everybody else, just
cause. Okay. All right. So I think Arthur is about to kind of push past you.
I hold my arm out.
Hi. What is it? What's your elf I see?
My entirely normal, unbiased eyes see nothing yet. I just figured it would be wiser for us to all go in together.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Alright. Here they come. Come on, lads. Let's go.
I'll stick the torch in first just to see if it
would
light
anything. And it snuffs
out.
And you descend into darkness, except for that red light that's up ahead of you.
Well,
I don't like this.
Yeah, this is not good,
Arthur. This is more of your realm. You introduced yourself as a dark wizard. Here's
nice,
some
dark.
Lots
We're
of dark.
We're in the dark. There you go.
Yeah,
We're
this
in the
is
dark.
This is your expertise.
Hey, fine. So he. You see him, you know, move his little. Oh, you barely see. You kind of just see little flashes of arcs of light as he begins to conjure.
God, I can barely see my hands in front of my face.
He's starting to kind of whiz, and you see like little symbols of arcane energy start to appear in front of him, and he finishes up and then snaps his fingers, and a little pair of orbs appear in front of him, like a dark navy blue light. Coming off of them, so it helps those who have dark vision. Those who don't have dark vision, it's not great. It's pretty dim light. But as he does so, you see that the light casts out about 20 feet, and you see that the darkness continues on after it. But what you can see on the ground is that this is what seems like a a design that leads around in a circle that's pointing towards the central plinth where this light is emerging. And the plinth comes up in a cylinder, and there's a light that's in the midst of it, and then there's a little platform on the top that there's this kind of blade-like shape that's at the top of it. Can't quite make it out unless you wanted to go closer.
Well,
shall we? Formation?
Oh, have we established one of those?
No, but we probably should at this point.
I'm going to kind of move ahead a little ways and kind of like nudge my face forward.
I'm going to walk immediately to his left.
All right, then I'll take his right.
Okay. All right. Fine, I'll go with the bear. And so, you know, he walks alongside as you head kind of flanking outwards, it sounds like. Are you spreading out more? How much distance do you want to have between them?
I would say no more than five feet.
Yeah, we're staying
okay.
Pretty tight. All
right, so it's not too far. You're staying within the light. Okay. So, yeah, as you make your way forward, you're noticing that along the floor, there are lines, like straight lines that go from the outside. The way you follow in, it looks like these lines kind of descend, arc towards the center. And so it's like this spoked wheel type effect. And along the way, there are these little divots, circular divots along the way. Small. They're like maybe yay big, about the size of a golf ball or a ping pong ball, and in their width and their depth. So you see those as you move forward. If somebody wants to do an investigation check, they want to take a look at things. How do you make the approach as you're moving forward?
I'm going to be moving very slowly and carefully, kind of sweeping my head from side to side, continuously sniffing the air, just kind of keeping all of my animal senses alert for anything that I can notice that would be, you know, out of the ordinary or, you know, any more so than this place already is.
Sure.
Yep.
So,
I'm going to be kind of looking around the left side, and if I can get a good look at what these golf ball thingies are, I'd like to.
Okay. Give me a perception checks, and we'll start with that.
Eight.
Okay.
Ten.
17.
17.
There we go. Berdari, you did it.
All right. It didn't sound like a bear. That sounded terrible. All right. So, okay, so I think that for you, KJ, you're looking around, and you're checking his divots. Maybe you pause for a moment, and I think as you pause just long enough, Arthur steps forward, and the light starts to recede away from you. So I think it kind of stops you from being able to really see well enough. So you have to kind of stand up and move forward. Or you can stay there if you want. It's up to you.
No, I'm going to keep moving with the light.
Okay. And then for Zavona, I think like you're straining your eyes to see, and there's so much darkness around, but you hear something. You hear something that's kind of either a breeze of some kind or. Some kind of drifting air of some kind. Our bear friend. You got the 17?
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. So as you move forward, you start to see Arthur getting quite excited. He's bouncing a little bit on his halfling feet, he's raising the light a little bit. He's kind of risking to move it forward a little bit more forward ahead of him, and as he does so, in the distance beyond the plinth, you see some kind of a shape moving in the shadows, and it moves from right to left, and then it skitters out of the light. It was probably, gosh, if you were to guess, it's maybe about the same size as you.
As soon as I see that, I'm going to basically call out in bear, there's something just past that light. Looks big. Assuming, without knowing for certain, whether or not KJ can still understand me.
Has 10
I'm
going to
kind of be looking towards him.
Has 10 minutes passed?
No, not yet. I'd say maybe you're about a third of the way through it.
Look alive, we've got company.
All right. Ready, so, my bow.
So Arthur stopped.
What here? What do you mean we have company? What's that? Look, we're right here. That's just...
Hidari said something's moving.
Hey, but there's some kind of lamp here. You can just light it. Maybe we can get some light in here.
Feel free to step forward and do that, friend.
Right. Fine.
He steps forward and the light kind of moves forward with him. You guys are starting to kind of descend into a little bit more darkness, just to let you know. But where he stops, you have dim light that's around you, so you can still kind of see. And he pushes this thing forward, the light forward, and it goes in towards the red light that's there. And things start to happen. So I want to have everybody go ahead and roll initiative.
Oh, goodness.
Just so I can get an idea of order. That's all I want to do.
Not as good.
Yep. With you there.
It's a 13 for me.
13, okay. All right.
21.
And 21, okay.
Way to go, Savona.
Thank you.
Always on the ready.
Constant vigilance.
Okay. Let's see here. That is going to be 10. All right, so that is Arthur's. So Arthur is at a 10. Okay, so...
I am at a 7.
7. All right, so we have 21. KJ has a...
13.
13, and then a 7. And then Arthur has a 10. Okay. All right. The first thing that happens that kind of triggers, puts this all into motion is you start to hear the sound of stone on stone moving. And it's out towards the distant edges of your vision. There's something that's moving behind you that you sense, and then something ahead of you, and then one to the right and one to the left. That's starting to move. So that's the first thing that happens. So Savona, what do you do? How do you react?
I'm going to move right up on Arthur just to keep kind of an eye, kind of like a guard on him, both for his protection and because I don't trust him. and so I just want to be wary of his movements and try to like back to back, like have an idea of my surroundings.
Okay. All right, cool. Let's see. All right, we'll go next. 17. Wait, who had the next one? Sorry. It was...
I think that was
you, Hidari.
I had a 7.
I had a 13.
13, no, sorry. 13, you're up next. Sorry about that.
Do I hear... I hear the stone as well?
Yes. Everybody hears that, unfortunately. Well, not like I can hide it. I mean, I'm a game master, not that.
I definitely think he's not raging yet, but he is gripping Darcy in two hands, holding an action of if something moves in his vicinity, it's going to get smacked.
Okay. All right. So ready action to attack.
I'd like to do, if I could, maybe, I don't know if you'll let me do this or this will be my action. I'd like to do another perception check to see if I can use my dark vision to see what on earth is moving.
Yeah, go ahead and roll a perception. I think that's fine because you need a focus to be able to prepare your attack. And then we'll have you reframe your ready to action just based on what you get.
Oop, out of the box. 8. Perception is not my friend tonight.
It's all right. So I think the echoing in the chamber that's the stone that's rotating and scraping against one another. It's kind of like the door when the door was sealing, but it's times four. You're getting that, so it's kind of giving you a little bit of a disorientation. So I think maybe you run a smack whatever comes into vision first. I guess is kind of the reaction.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, all right. I think we can leave it at that. That will work fine. Okay. Yes, that. Okay. Next up, we have my halfling friend. Let's see what he's going to prepare. He is going to. Okay. So I think what he does is he leans over and he touches. I think like you're still within range. So he turns around. And I think he touches Hidari on the nose. So, Hidari, if I can have you... Let's see. I guess it would have to be a willing person, right? How does this work if you're... I don't know. Are you willing to let him cast something upon you? I guess that'd be the question.
I think I'm going to be really skeptical, but I'm going to go with it for the moment.
Okay. So he turns around and he steps towards you, and his as he does so, unfortunately, this doesn't help you with your decision making, but you already made the choice.
I did.
As he comes towards you, you see behind him the lantern that he lit is starting to, you know, grow brighter, right? And so it's given him this like horrible, you know, aspect. He's a halfling, so that kind of diminishes it. But he reaches out, and all of a sudden, his hand speeds up. It's super fast, and it has this kind of like the fading imagery behind it. You know, like the whole descending camera angle or whatever. And it comes up and it touches you, and all of a sudden, the room around you slows, slows incredibly. And you now have haste cast upon you.
Nice.
And so, yeah, to everybody else's perspective, Bear has gone gonzo fast. So he is. So that is his movie. Actually, after he does that, he retreats back to the stone plant that's there. That's him. Now we go to Seven.
Which would be me.
Yay. All right.
So let me, I'm just going to pull up haste because I have it as a reference here. So have I been able to track the movement of this thing at all, or did it kind of, after I saw it, disappear and I haven't gotten a...
You know that it moved from this camera angles here is not going to help, but it moved from your right to your left. So assuming that's the right way for the camera, and I know this is audio.
Right.
But yeah, in the distance from your right to your left. So the other side of the planet.
Okay.
And there's light that's starting to grow in this room, but obviously it's a lot slower now. But you feel it's getting a little bit brighter.
I think that skepticism, that kind of nervous energy in that moment, is very suddenly going to transform itself into this like hyper energy as he feels this kind of new spell effect hit him, and he's just gonna like bolt ahead on the to the other side of the plinth, like looking for whatever this thing is.
All right, awesome. So for the audience, the spell haste, when it's cast upon a willing creature, semi-willing, I guess. We'll go with that. this creature gains a +2 to AC, so make sure you mark that down.
Yep.
Have advantage on dexterity saving throws, and they gain an additional action on each of their turns. So that action can be used only to take an attack, one weapon attack only, dash, disengage, hide, or use an object. So, you know, if you want to use your bear phone, you can do that. And, yeah, so when the spell ends, so be aware of this, the target can't move or take actions until after its next turn as a wave of lethargy sweeps upon you.
Right.
So this lasts for 1 minute, so 10 rounds. So mark it. First round, you have you're a blur of fur as you move towards your left, towards this this whatever this unknown entity is. Give me a give me a perception check.
Okay. 21.
So 21, you've flashed your way over there. As I said, a blur of fur that has arrived to almost to the edge of the room. You race up towards it, and you suddenly realize that you can see a little bit better on this side as you come towards what looks like a stone ring that's rotating and moving. You sense this is the grinding that you were hearing from one of the other corner behind you. Well, not so much corner, because you realize this is a curved wall that you've come across. It's roughly, you've moved close to 60 feet out.
Okay.
And as this thing, this ring is rotating, it's coming upwards, and there is light that's coming from the middle of this ring. It's starting to emanate upwards. It's a greenish light, kind of like emerald green, very bright. Or bright in color, if not quite bright in light just yet. So as you're moving, yeah, the stone is, it's moving incredibly slow to your eyes.
Sure.
And as you come over here, you see some kind of orbish looking creature that's scampering along on, I want to say, very almost two thin sets of legs. Like it's got six legs around its orbish body with arms that are up above it, and it has eyes all around, and they're blinking rapidly, almost as rapidly as you move. And it sees you, and it's, you know, just the slow turn. It's starting to slowly turn and move away.
So it seems to be fleeing.
Yeah, it sees you, and it's just like, whoa. And it starts to turn. It's like, and I think, like, right before we change turns, unless you have an action that you want to do, I think you
at this point Hidari's just really amused. Right. Like, he's just having a moment of like, well, this is so cool, and that thing's afraid of me. I don't think I need to worry about it too much. But whoa, I'm really fast.
Yeah, just like just
yeah,
everything's just spinning by you. Okay, so that's Hidari. Remind me and the audience of our turn orders. We have a 21, I believe, that is for, and I'm gesturing for the camera like that's going to work for audio. Gesturing towards Savona is with a 21. We have a 13
for KJ.
KJ. So KJ, you are next, I believe. That was at the bottom of the round, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was bottom of the order. Okay. Back to the top.
Screen wipe. Here we go. Let's do. let's go back to Savona. Savona, I want for you to give me a wisdom save, please.
DC 12.
16. 16. Awesome. All right. So you. You ever been on a roller coaster, and how you're cresting upwards, and it's not the ones where it's that chink 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 chink. It's the one where you're cresting at speed, and you have that momentary feeling of weightlessness and that kind of fluttery feeling in your stomach as it happens. Whoa. You feel something kind of grasping at that feeling and that tingling sensation on your body, and you. You're kind of moving a little bit, you're sidestepping, getting ready to get into position as you're about to commence with your action, and you feel yourself lifting upwards, but then you're still on the balls of your feet, and then you come back down nice and gentle. And just as that happens, a voice echoes in your head, in your mind, and says, "Hello, little magpie. How are we?"